You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Manifestations of Karma. This is Lecture 10, which is entitled Free Will and Karma in the Future of Human Evolution, given in Hamburg on the 27th of May, 1910. There are certain far-reaching questions of karma which are difficult to answer or even approach in any way, without touching on certain important mysteries of our world existence, and this I intend to do today. These questions mainly relate to our ability to influence karma, especially other people's karma. In other words, to the possibility of changing the direction of karma to a greater or lesser extent. Such questions may arise, or else be resolved, out of what has been said and illuminated from different angles, or followed through in other ways. We might ask, what happens in a person's karma when, by reason of his previous acts or experiences, a necessity for illness has arisen to compensate for these acts and experiences? And this person is actually healed through human assistance by means of remedies or other intervention. What does this signify, and how does it relate to an in-depth view of the law of karma? I will say right away that, in order to deal with just a few of the major points of this question, I will need to touch on things that are very far removed from today's scientific thinking, as well as from the general concepts held by people in our time. Things that can only be discussed among anthroposophists, as it were, who are prepared for it in the sense of already having acquired some knowledge about the deeper grounds of existence, and who also have some idea of the deeper reasons behind the phenomena, which can only be dealt with in outline today. Nevertheless, I would like to take this opportunity to ask one thing of you. I will have to talk about the deeper foundations of the Earth's existence today, and I shall endeavor to express myself as precisely as possible. But it would be wrong to speak in this way in a different context or out of context, and it would lead to one misunderstanding after another. I ask you, for the present time, just to accept it, and make no other use of it. I, too, must therefore insist, with regard to these things, that no one should consider them as teachings which could simply be passed on in some way or other, for it is only the context which justifies such a presentation. And such a presentation is only justified when it is backed by the consciousness that can coin suitable words to express thoughts of this kind. We are going to be concerned with the deeper nature of material existence on the one hand, and the nature of soul existence on the other. It is essential that we acquire a deeper comprehension of what pertains to the soul and to the material world. This is, indeed, necessary for a quite definite reason. For the reason given in the previous lectures, when we said that the human soul can penetrate more or less deeply into matter. Yesterday we characterized the nature of the male by saying that in a man the soul penetrates deeper into matter, while in the female the soul holds back in a certain way and is more independent of matter. We saw that much of karmic experience depends upon how the penetration of the soul into matter takes place. We saw also how certain illnesses in one incarnation appear as the karmic consequences of errors made by the soul in former incarnations, when it worked at its deeds, experiences, and impulses. Then, on the way between death and a new birth, the soul acquired the tendency to transform into matter that which was formerly only as a characteristic, a mere influence in the soul, so that it now permeates the body. Because the human being is then permeated by a soul which has also absorbed either the luciferic or Ahrimanic influence, the human substance is damaged in consequence. This is where the illness takes its course. So we can say, quote, in a sick body there dwells a damaged soul, which has come under a wrong influence, a luciferic or aromatic influence. As soon as these influences are diverted from the soul, the normal relationship of soul and body should come about. In other words, health would be restored, close quote. So we must ask ourselves, quote, what are these two principles of human existence on earth, matter and soul? What is their deeper nature? Close quote. Nowadays, people generally imagine that the answer to the questions, quote, of what does matter consist, what is the soul, close quote, would have to be the same all over the world. And I am not suggesting that human beings should find it easy to grasp that the beings who lived on the old moon would have answered the question about the nature of matter and soul very differently from earthly beings. For existence is so much in the throes of evolution that even things like the ideas a being may have about the deeper foundations of his own nature will change, so that the answer to the questions what is matter, what is soul, must also change. Therefore, it must be clear from the start that any answers given are answers of earthly beings and relevant only to earthly beings. A person will at first judge matter according to what confronts him in the external world, in the shape of different beings and things, and everything which makes an impression upon him in any way. Then he discovers that there are different sorts of matter. But I need not go very far into that, for you may find in all the ordinary books those expositions which could be given here if we had more time. These differences in matter present themselves to us when we see the different metals, gold, copper, lead, and so on, or when we see anything that does not belong to this category. You know, too, that chemistry traces these different materials back to certain fundamental substances of matter called elements. These elements, even in the 19th century, were still considered to be substances possessing certain properties which did not admit of being further divided. But in the case of a substance such as water, we are able to separate it into hydrogen and oxygen. Yet in hydrogen and oxygen themselves we have substances which, according to the chemistry of the 19th century, were incapable of being further divided. One could distinguish about 70 such elements. You will doubtless also know that owing to phenomena which were produced in connection with a few special elements, radium, for instance, and also owing to various phenomena produced in the study of electricity, the idea of the elements has been shaken in many ways. Then it was concluded that the 70 elements or so were only temporary limitations of matter, and that one could trace back the possibility of subdivision to a fundamental substance, which, then, through inner combinations, through the nature of its inner elementary being, manifests at one time as gold, at another time as potassium, calcium, and so on. These scientific theories vary, and just as the scientific theories changed in quote, each 50 years, close quote, of the 19th century, so it came about that certain physicists saw in matter certain entities which are charged with electricity. Just as the theory of ions is now in fashion, there will be other fashions in science in the not-too-distant future, and other theories about the constitution of matter. These are facts. Scientific opinions are changeable and must be changeable, for they depend altogether upon those facts which are of significance for one particular epoch. In contrast to this, the teachings of spiritual science have always, and throughout all epochs of earthly civilization, embraced one and the same view about the nature of material existence, about matter. And this will be true for all future earthly civilizations. In order to lead you on to what spiritual science looks upon as the essence of matter, I should like to say the following. You all know that ice is a solid body, not through its own nature, but through external circumstances. It at once ceases to be a solid if we raise the temperature sufficiently. It then becomes a fluid substance. Therefore, it does not depend upon what is in a substance itself, as to what form it takes in the external world, but upon the entire conditions of the universe surrounding it. We can then further bring heat to this substance, and out of the water we can, after a certain point, produce steam. We have ice, water, steam, and through the raising of the temperature, we have caused what we may describe as the appearance of matter in manifold forms. Thus we have to distinguish in matter that the appearance it presents to us does not come out of an inner constitution, but that the manner in which it confronts us depends upon the general constitution of the universe, and that one must not isolate any part of the whole universe into individual substances. The methods of modern science cannot reach where spiritual science is able to reach. The science of today can never, by means of the methods at its disposal, bring the substance of ice, which, when the temperature is increased, is first made fluid and then turned into steam, into the final condition attainable on Earth, into which every substance can be transmuted. It is not possible today, by scientific means, to produce a set of circumstances to demonstrate, for example, the following. If you take gold and rarefy it as far as it can be rarefied upon the earth, you will finally reduce it to one state or another. If you subject silver to the same process, the same will apply, equally with copper and so forth. Spiritual science can do this because it is based upon the methods of clairvoyant research, and is thus able to observe how, in the spaces between our substances, there is always a uniform substance everywhere, which represents the extreme limit to which all matter is reducible. Spiritual research discovers a condition of dissolution in which all materials are reduced to a common basis. But what then appears there is no longer matter, but something which lies beyond all the specialized forms of matter around us. Every single substance, be it gold, silver, or any other substance, is there seen to be a condensation of this fundamental substance, which is really no longer matter. There is a fundamental essence of our material earth existence, out of which all matter only comes into being by a condensing process. And to the question, quote, what is this fundamental substance of our earth existence, close quote, spiritual science gives the answer, quote, every substance upon the earth is condensed light, close quote. There is nothing in material existence, in any form whatever, which is anything but condensed light. When you know the facts, there is no need to prove theories such as the vibration hypothesis of the 19th century, when it was attempted to represent light by means coarser than light. Light cannot be traced back to anything else in our material existence. Wherever you reach out and touch a substance, there you have condensed, compressed light. All matter is, in its essence, light. We have now looked at one side of the question from the point of view of spiritual science. We have seen that light is the foundation of all material existence. If we look at the material human body, that also, inasmuch as it consists of matter, is nothing but a substance woven out of light. Inasmuch as man is a material being, he is composed of light. Let us now consider the other question. Of what does the soul consist? If we applied the methods of spiritual scientific research to the actual basic essence of the soul, we would find that everything that manifests on earth as a phenomenon of soul is a modification, is one of the infinite variety of transformations possible of that which we call love, provided that we genuinely grasp the intrinsic meaning of this word. Every single stirring of the soul, wherever it occurs, is love modified in some way or other. And when the inner and outer are configured into one, as it were, and imprinted into one another, as is the case in the human being, we find that his outer corporeality is woven out of light, and that his inner soul is spiritually woven out of love. Indeed, love and light are interwoven in some way in all the phenomena of our earth existence. For a spiritual understanding of these matters, the first question to ask is this, quote, how are love and light interwoven in any way? Close quote. Love and light are the two elements, the two components which permeate all earthly existence. Love is the sole constituent. Read that one more time. Love is the soul, S-O-U-L, constituent of earthly being. Light is the outer material constituent of earthly being. However, for these two elements, which otherwise would exist separately throughout the great course of world existence, to become interwoven, a mediating force is needed that will weave light into love. The power that thus weaves light into the element of love must have no special interest in love. It must be interested only in spreading the light as far as possible, in letting the light stream into the element of love. Such a power cannot be an earthly power, for the earth is the cosmos of love. The earth's mission is to weave love into everything. In other words, everything which is connected with earthly existence is connected with love in some way. This is where the Luciferic beings come into play. They remained behind on the moon, the cosmos of wisdom. They have a special interest in weaving light into love. The Luciferic beings are at work wherever and whenever our inner soul, which is woven out of love, enters into any kind of relationship with the element of light in any form. And we are, after all, confronted with light in all material existence. When light touches our being in any way whatsoever, the Luciferic beings appear, and the Luciferic quality weaves into the element of love. This is how it came about that human beings, over the course of repeated lives, became associated with the Luciferic element. Lucifer became interwoven with the element of love, and all that is formed from love has the impress of Lucifer, which alone can bring us what causes love to be not merely a self-abandonment, but permeates it in its innermost being with wisdom. Otherwise, without this wisdom, love would be an impersonal force in us, for which we could not be responsible. But in this way, love becomes the essential force of the capital I, where that Luciferic element is woven, which otherwise is only to be found outside in matter. Thus it becomes possible for our inner being, which during its earth existence should receive the attribute of love in its fullness, to be permeated besides by everything that can be described as an activity of Lucifer, and from this side leads to a penetration of external matter. So that which is woven out of light is not interwoven with love alone, but with love that is permeated by Lucifer. When we take up the Luciferic element, we interweave into the material part of our own body a soul which is, it is true, woven out of love, but into which the Luciferic element is interwoven. It is that love which is permeated with the luciferic element which impregnates matter and is the cause of illness working out from within. In connection with what we have already mentioned as being a necessary consequence of an illness proceeding from a luciferic element, we may say that the ensuing pain, which as we have seen is a consequence of the luciferic element, shows us the effect of the working of the karmic law. So the consequences of an act or a temptation coming from Lucifer are experienced karmically, and the pain itself indicates what should lead to the overcoming of the consequences in question. Ought we to help in such a case or not? Ought we in any way to remove what has pressed in from the luciferic element with all its consequences working out in pain? Remembering the answer to our question as to the nature of the soul, it follows of necessity that we have the right to do this only if we find the means, in the case of a person who has the luciferic element in him which caused his illness, to expel that luciferic element in the right way. What is the remedy which exerts a stronger action so that the luciferic element is driven out? What is it which has been defiled by the luciferic on our earth? It is love. Hence only by means of love can we give real help for karma to work out in the right way. Finally, we must see in that element of love, which has been compromised in the soul realm by Lucifer and caused illness, a force which must be affected by another force. We must pour in love. We must give love, because that which flows in through a deed of love will be helpful. This element of love given as medicine is common to all those approaches to healing which involve the healing of the soul to a greater or lesser extent. All methods of psychological healing are connected in some way with the administering of love. Love is the medicine we give to the other. Love must be the essence of it all. And it surely can be. Even when the psychology involved is straightforward, when all we do is to help another person deal with his depressed state of mind, love is involved. All methods of healing, from the simplest to the more involved methods of healing, which are often referred to, rather amateurishly, as, quote, magnetic healing, close quote, must arise out of love. What does the healer, in such a case, actually communicate to the one needing to be healed? It is, to use an expression of physics, an, quote, exchange of tensions, close quote. What lives in the healer, namely certain processes in his etheric body, relates in a particular way to the one to be healed, creating a kind of polarity. Polarity arises just as it would, in a more abstract sense, when one kind of electricity, say positive, is produced and the corresponding other, the negative, appears. In this way, polarities are created. This is a supreme deed of sacrifice. We are calling forth a process within ourselves which is not only intended to be meaningful to ourselves, for then one would call forth one process only. Let me read that again. We are calling forth a process within ourselves which is not only intended to be meaningful to ourselves, for then one would call forth one process only. In this case, however, the process is intended to call forth in the other the polar opposite. This polarity will depend on the contact established between the healer and the person to be healed. When this is produced, when the opposite process is called forth in the other, this is, in the fullest sense of the word, the sacrifice of a power, the transmuted power of love, a deed of love. This is what works in healing. the transmuted power of love. We must be in no doubt, therefore, that any endeavor to heal must be carried by this power of love, or else it will fail. Nevertheless, processes of love need not necessarily enter our conscious awareness. They may well take place in the subconscious. Even the techniques of healing, as one might regard them, for example, the way the hands are applied, are a reflection of a deed of sacrifice. Even in the case of healing processes where the immediate connections are hidden from us, where we cannot observe what is being done, there is a deed of love involved, even if it has taken on the form of mere technique. We can see that we may very well intervene by means of soul-related healing, for the reason that the soul essentially consists of love. Such healing may appear to involve processes which lie at the periphery of human nature, but it is a fact that that which is love in its essence will be enriched by the love it is in need of. Thus, on the one side, we see how we can help, so that after being caught in the toils of Lucifer, the sufferer is able to free himself again. Because love is the fundamental essence of the soul, we may indeed influence the direction of karma. On the other hand, we may ask, what has become of the substance woven from light in which the soul dwells? What has become of the material substance of man that is woven out of light? Take the body, our outer being in its material corporeality. If, through a karmic process, there had not been imprinted from out of the soul into matter a love substance, such as is permeated by Lucifer or Ahriman, if a pure love substance only had poured in, it would not have been defiling or damaging to the substance woven out of light. If love alone were to flow into matter, it would then so flow into the human body that the latter could not be damaged. It is only because love, which has absorbed luciferic or Ahrimanic forces, can penetrate that the substance woven out of light becomes less perfect than it was originally intended to be. Therefore, it is only due to the luciferic or Ahrimanic influences which pour into the human being during his consecutive incarnations that the human organization is not what it might be. If it were as it ought to be, it would manifest healthy human substance. But because it has absorbed the activities of Lucifer and Ahriman, sickness and disease result. How can we remove from outside those influences which have entered from within, from an imperfect soul, that is, from a wrong love substance? What happens to the body when something which is inappropriate affects it? According to spiritual science, something happens which turns light in some way into its opposite. Light has its opposite in darkness or obscurity. Everything that presents itself, strange as it may sound, as the defilement of that which is woven out of light, is a darkness woven out of a luciferic or Ahrimanic influence. Thus we see darkness woven into the human substance. But this darkness was only thus interwoven because the human body has become the bearer of the I that lives on through the incarnations. This was formerly not there. Only a human body can be subject to this corruption. For such a corruption was formerly not contained in that which was woven out of light. The human being today draws the basis of his material life out of what he has gradually rejected in the course of evolution. That is, the animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, and the mineral kingdom. These also contain the different substances woven out of light for earth existence. In none of these substances are there any of the influences which, in the course of human karma, have acted on the organism through the soul. In the three kingdoms around us, therefore, we cannot, through luciferic or Ahrimanic influence emanating from our love forces, have a defiling effect. Nothing of us is there. What in us has been defiled is spread around us in all its purity. Consider a mineral substance, a salt, or any other substance which we also have within us, or might have within us. But in us it is interwoven with the love substance defiled by Lucifer or Ahriman. Outside, however, it is pure. Thus every substance outside is distinguished from what it is within the human body. Externally, it is always different from what it is in the human being, because in him it is interwoven with the Ahrimanic or Luciferic influence. That is the reason why, for everything of external substance which can be more or less defiled by us, there must be something outside which represents the same thing in its pure condition, without the human damage. That which exists in the world, in its purity, is the external cure for the corresponding substance in its damaged state. If you apply this in the right way to the human being, you then have the specific remedy for the corresponding injury. Thus we find, in an objective way, which remedy may be applied to the human body. Here is the injury, characterized as a specific form of darkness. And that which is not yet dark, as the outer woven pure light. And we see why we are able to remove the darkness in the human being, if we bring pure substance woven from light to bear upon him. Thus the substance woven from pure light is a specific remedy for the injury. Attention has often been drawn to the fact that anthroposophists, in particular, should not fall into the narrow-minded error of denying that in such cases there really is a specific remedy against some injury or other, or which beneficially affects one organ or another. It has often been said that the organism has, within it, the forces with which to help itself. Even though the Vienna school of nihilistic therapy may be right in its assertion that by calling up the opposing forces we can bring about a cure, we may nevertheless help the cure by specific remedies. Here we see a parallel which one may describe through spiritual science. From what I have said about diphtheria, for instance, you may gather that the karmic causes have in this case particularly affected the astral body. We find what is most closely related to the astral body in the animal kingdom. You will always find in those forms of illness closely connected with the astral body that medicine, unconsciously driven by a dim impulse, seeks for remedies which originate in the animal kingdom, whereas the remedies for illnesses whose causes lie in the etheric body are sought for in the vegetable kingdom. An interesting lecture might be given about the relation of the purple foxglove to certain illnesses of the heart. These are things which, inasmuch as they are based on truth, are not right for 5 years only, as one doctor states, and then begin to be wrong, as in the case when only external symptoms are taken into consideration. But there is a certain treasure of remedies which can always in some way be traced back to some connection with spiritual science, which have been inherited without any knowledge where they came from. Just as today astronomers do not know that the Kant and Laplace theory originated in the mystery schools of the Middle Ages, so people do not know where these really valuable remedies came from. Causes of illness, which are connected with the nature of the physical body, lead to the use of remedies from the mineral kingdom. Even such analogies can be helpful indicators. We have established now that our connectedness with the world around us makes it possible for us to be helped in two ways. On the one hand, through receiving the modified love, inherent in healing methods aimed at our soul nature, and on the other through one of the many different forms of modified light inherent in physical healing methods. All healing is accomplished with either inner soul-related means, with love, or with outer physical means, which all represent some form of condensed light. One day, when science will have advanced to the stage of taking seriously the supersensible, when it will have been recognized that all matter is a form of condensed light, then this fundamental principle will throw a spiritual light on all scientific searching for outer methods of healing people. Thus, we can see that the wisdom accumulated over long periods of time about methods of healing in the mystery schools of ancient Egypt and ancient Greece is not mere nonsense, but that there is a sound kernel in all these things. It is not the task of anthroposophy to take sides with any particular school of thought, to say, for instance, that in one school of medicine or another they are administering poison to people. The word poison has an almost suggestive effect these days, and people don't consider that it is altogether relative. What is poison, after all? Any substance can work as poison. It depends on the method of healing and on the quantity administered. Water is a strong poison if you drink 10 liters of it all at once. The effect of this in terms of chemistry is not very different from that of any other substance. It is always a question of the quantity involved, for all these concepts are relative. From what we have learned today, we can say, quote, "How fortunate that for any illness we may suffer something exists." Excuse me, read that again. "How fortunate that for any illness we may suffer, something exists in the world of nature around us which will help us overcome it," close quote. And we can meet the world around us with a special sense that there is more to rejoice over than the delights of beautiful flowers or mountains glowing in the sunlight. We may rejoice over the fact that everything around us is so intimately connected with everything we ourselves are made of, good or bad. We can enjoy a great deal more in nature than that which immediately appeals to us, for we will discover, the more deeply we grasp what it is that has thus condensed into outer matter, that this world of nature in which we delight contains powerful healing substance, the right healing substance for every illness man may succumb to, is hidden somewhere in nature. And once we recognize nature as a healer, we must try to understand its language, obey what it tells us, and act accordingly. This is rarely possible today, because mankind has denied the light, and knowledge has been pervaded by darkness. This has made it difficult to listen to the pure language of nature. Therefore, we need to be clear about this, that when no help can be given, when an illness cannot be influenced for karmic reasons, this does not imply absolutely that nothing could be done in every case. This remarkable connectedness of man and nature shows us once again that the whole wide world is one being, and we are part of this being. The keys to countless mysteries of earth existence lie in these words: matter is woven out of light. The essence of the soul is love. But this applies only to earth existence and not to any other realm of universal existence. Thus we have shown nothing less than that whenever we change the direction of karma in any way, we are connecting ourselves with the elements of our earthly existence, with matter woven out of light, or with love that has become soul. We have now established that we can be helped from two different sides due to our connectedness with the world around us. We either draw the remedies out of our surroundings, out of the condensed light, or out of our own soul by the healing act of love. We unite ourselves with what is right in every sense upon the earth when, on the one hand, we unite ourselves with light, and on the other with love. All earth conditions are in some way conditions of balance between light and love, and everything unhealthy is a disturbance of that balance. If the disturbance is in the realm of love, we can help by applying the power of love ourselves. And if the disturbance is in the realm of light, we can help by trying to find that light in the universe, which will dissolve the darkness within us. These are the basic elements by means of which human beings can provide help in the sense of healing. They demonstrate how everything in earthly life depends on the balance of opposite elements. Light and love are in fact polar opposites, and ultimately, everything that happens in the realms of soul and matter on earth depends on the way in which these elements weave into one another in our life. Therefore, it need not surprise us that in all the spheres of human life, evolution continues from epoch to epoch with a balance inclining first to one side and then swinging back to the other, so that the course of evolution resembles the surging of waves. It goes down and it goes up, and the disturbed equilibrium is forever balanced by the pendulum swinging this way or that. When you consider that throughout human life the state of equilibrium is disturbed in one direction or another, you will find it possible to understand even the most complex processes in civilization. Take a period when certain harmful effects entered into the evolution of mankind, because people only contemplated the inner life and neglected the outer, for example, in the Middle Ages. At the high point of mysticism, the external remained unheeded, and this led to all manner of misconceptions. This was followed by an age in which people could not bear mysticism at all, but directed their gaze to the outer world so as to make the pendulum swing to the opposite side. And then there are the periods of transition from the Middle Ages to modern times. You will find a great variety of such disturbances in the state of equilibrium. In this connection, I would like to point out that an eminent characteristic of many people in our time is reflected in the fact that they have completely forgotten, have lost their connection to what might be called the consciousness of a supersensible world. Consequently, there are great numbers of people today who are oblivious to the existence of a spiritual world, and are therefore opposed even to thinking about the possible existence of a spiritual world. In times like this, one will always find something like a counterpart of that phenomenon. I would like to characterize this in very straightforward terms. When there are people on the physical plane who become so enmeshed in the sense-perceptible world that they completely forget the spiritual world, the opposite tendency appears among those souls who are living in the spiritual world between death and a new birth, a tendency which works over from the physical into the spiritual plane, impelling them to occupy themselves with the influences which act out of the spiritual world into the physical. It is this which brings about, in the physical world, the intervention by souls who are still in that state before birth. These souls work down into the physical world in any way they can, and they are able to work indirectly through people who are open to such influences from the spiritual world. If one is called upon to introduce clarity in matters like this, one must not accept everything that purports to be a revelation from a spiritual world. It is not difficult to distinguish the really characteristic cases in which the dead, in order to make the pendulum swing the other way, are anxious to show in a palpable manner that there is indeed a spiritual world. Because there are so many people who are completely in the dark, who have woven so much darkness into the spiritual part of their nature, that they know nothing about the spiritual world, there are among the dead many who have a strong desire to work into the physical world. Such things generally occur when nothing is done deliberately to bring them about on the physical plane. The most typical cases are the ones that happen without any special preparation, and just appear, as it were, as messages from the spiritual world. This is the connection between the two phenomena. On the one hand, the people who are caught up in materialism, and on the other, the desire on the part of those in the spiritual world to send messages to the physical world. You will find much proof of these things collected in the book by our friend Ludwig Deinhardt, titled Das Mysterium des Menschen. It is a systematic survey of a lot of interesting phenomena. Such accounts are very scattered in today's scientific literature. Therefore, it is a good thing to have in this book a collection of these spiritual facts, which are actually very characteristic of one aspect of our age. You will find very aptly described in this book the typical case of a scientist who tried in all sorts of ways to prove the existence of a spiritual world by materialistic methods. I mean the late Friedrich Myers, who after his death was strongly impelled to show mankind, by means of communications from the spiritual world and by spiritual means, what he had endeavored to do during his life. I told you this to illustrate how in the world and in world affairs we see continual disturbances of the balance, followed by efforts to restore the balance. This continual disturbance and restoration of the balance between the two elements of light and love is fundamental to earth existence. And in human karma, from incarnation to incarnation, both work to restore the disturbed condition. Karma, working its serpentine way through incarnations, is just such a disturbed balance, until man, after all his incarnations, shall at last create the final balance, which can be reached upon earth. Having fulfilled his mission on earth, he evolves then into a new planetary form. I have endeavored to present you with what you need for a deeper understanding of the laws of karma. That is why I have plainly stated the fundamental and mysterious truth. Matter is in reality woven light, and that which belongs to the soul is refined love. These are ancient occult sayings, but they will be true for all times to come, and will prove fruitful in human evolution, not only for our pursuit of knowledge, but also for our work in the world. The end of Lecture 10.